Hello and welcome back to the Hulkcast. It's been a pretty eventful international break, but we're back with Aston Villa in the Premier League. They recently beat Brighton by 2-1. I'm James Rushton, joined again by Cole Petham and Danny Raza. Danny, how are you getting on, mate?
I'm doing well, mate. I'm doing very, very well. I am obviously very happy with the performance of Villa over the weekend. Really, really missed the podcast and really missed football. And I'm just glad that we're back from that international break.
How's our favourite Canadian getting on after that pretty intense preview midweek?
I'm buzzing because we showed people what's up, because a lot of people did not like that preview in the sense of his opinion. I hope they actually enjoyed the preview. Please follow us. It's appreciated. I'm doing very well, guys. I missed you guys. It's kind of like we don't talk for 2 weeks, basically, when it's, we message each other aside from the podcast, but it gets a little lonely. And yeah, I missed you guys.
It's been an extra long time for me because I wasn't on the last one. I enjoyed it. It was very good, but it was just missing a certain something. And I think that certain something was myself.
Yeah. it's been a long time since James was on the show, actually.
Yeah. So I guess the first thing we have to speak about today, unfortunately, for Tyrone Mings, was the racist incident or incidents that occurred during his England debut, a special occasion for him. And of course, he shone through in the end. But in what was meant to be a really good moment for him, it was probably the worst case of racist abuse involving a Villa player for a very long time. It was audible, dehumanising chants from a large section of the Bulgarian support. Shameful, really. But Danny, I think... you know, for your job at the BBC, you probably got a lot of exposure to this, the media coverage of this event. What was your take? I mean, there's only really one take you can kind of have about the event, but how did it go down in your mind?
Yeah, it was really, really, really interesting because I don't think I've ever seen something like that unfold on the pitch, certainly involving English players before. And I just remember thinking the whole time, something is going to happen here. Something's actually going to kick off. And I did for a moment of time think that... So basically, you know, what happened was Tyrone Mings, Raheem Sterling, I can't remember who else was playing, but every time and one of the black players got the ball, there was an audible amount of booing from within the Bulgarian ranks. And it wasn't all of the Bulgarian fans. There was a certain section of them who were obviously screaming racial abuse at our players, but yeah, I genuinely thought for a moment in time that England were going to walk off, and rightfully so. There was a lot of media coverage afterwards, and actually to some degree the way that the English players reacted, the way that Tyrone Mings reacted, certainly set off a big chain of events, because it led to a major shakeup in the Bulgarian FA.
Cole, I don't know what your perspective in terms of, you know, international football is, because you don't follow the three lines. You're not an England fan. You follow the Canadian men's national team, I assume. But the international take, the international Villa fan take, is what I want from you. I guess it must have hurt to see, you know, this happen to Tyrone.
Oh, absolutely. Surprisingly, that actually got brought up over here in a lot of news outlets, and they don't label it maybe as like England versus Bulgaria, but more as like a kind of racial issue, I guess, on like a global news circuit here, but it did come up. They were speaking about it. From a Villa fan perspective, it's shocking. I'm not shocked it still happens, because there's so many different parts of the world that are still so far behind on the times and are still stuck really in like the 1940s, even before that, in terms of mentality. Like, when do things change? And fair enough for the rest of the England team sticking up for him and even speaking to each other and contemplate even going out for the second half, because things like that, I can't believe it still happens. But at the same time, you're not really surprised. The other thing I wanted to bring up about that as well, did you guys see the news reporter there, whoever it was, the journalist after the Bulgarian ones to Southgate calling him a liar and saying how the Bulgarian end was nice or something and cozy or something. I can't remember what he said, but yeah.
Wow. Yeah, there was a lot of denial going on, I think. And I think that even comes back to England. I think we assume that Bulgaria is the only racist country in the world and the only hateful country in the world. And I think that's a terrible assumption to make, because, you know, yesterday we saw a game in England get called off because of racist abuse, you know, Haringey Borough versus Yeovil town. That was called off because of alleged racial abuse. And then you have, you know, leaked comments from the Chelsea supporters, just a co-chairman saying he wouldn't support any LGBT rights within that group. And then you have a hateful Villa fan, an idiotic Villa fan, assuming because we beat Brighton that it's a condemnation of LGBT rights, which is just, you know, these hateful issues aren't just contained to one corner of the world, and we have to look out for that, Danny.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, we have to, you know, at the end of the day, you've got to remember that the Bulgarian FA, they condemned it, didn't they? That was their stance on the whole matter. And you know, there was a large chunk of Bulgarian supporters there who you could see were very upset with the way that group of people were reacting. And as you say, look, I mean, it happened over the weekend as well in England. And you know what? If Tyrone Mings, if some of the other English players hadn't spoke up earlier this week, we might not have seen that happen. And I think now what we're going to see as a result of the way that this has been handled by the England players, fair play to them, and the way that Haringey Borough as well reacted over the weekend, I think what you're going to see is a lot more players and a lot more teams just aren't going to take it, just not going to stand for it. And I think what you've got to hope is that in other parts of the world, players' teammates support them in those kinds of decisions as well. But certainly now, it's good to see that players are saying, no, we're not going to take it anymore.
Yeah, I think we can all be very proud of how this English team acted. And it's so odd to see, you know, this young, diverse team and its support, which can often be rooted in nationalism. This team kind of almost seemingly lead the way. I think I'm certainly really proud of Tyrone Mings, and I'm really proud of the actions of this England team, because when they went in at half time, and there's stories on The Athletic, there's plenty of stories elsewhere about how they acted at half time, and I was really upset because this is an England team full of people from all over the UK with backgrounds that stem across, you know, rooted all across the world. And the way that they wanted to act was, we want to crush this team in front of these fans. And they almost, you know, they certainly did on the scoreline. And on another day, they could have put 10 past them. So I don't know how many goals stop Nazi salutes and dehumanising chanting, but England was certainly there to put on a show, and a bravo to them. It's just a shame that back in his country, it seems to have emboldened a certain set of fans. So hopefully we can all act, you know, rationally ourselves and listen to others who aren't like us, and maybe make a world that's better down the line. But certainly in the short term, it doesn't look that way. But guys, let's talk football. Aston Villa beat Brighton on the weekend. It was a very mixed bag of an event. A lot went on. There was red cards, VAR controversy, disallowed goals. Jack Grealish came to show what he was made of. Danny, what's your overall take on this match before we dig into the nitty gritty?
My overall take of Brighton?
Yes.
I thought that we played incredibly well, sort of, over the course of 90 minutes. But at first I was thinking, hang on a second, we're kind of allowing Brighton to play a lot here. But by the end of it, I think it's that international break lag, isn't it? It's that international break lag that we basically, we chipped away out for the full 90 minutes. And yet again, we had to do it against 10 men. And I was slightly worried for a large part of that game that we were going to go back to our sticking point of not being able to beat teams with 10 men.
When Aaron Moy was sent off, did you think, hang on here, we're going to lose this match now? Or were you emboldened by the fact that Brighton had lost a key player?
I was more in the perspective of, oh my God, we have our millionth like advantage of the year so far, because it seems like every game we go have that man advantage and the opposing team is down to 10 men virtually. It was encouraging, but then again, at what point, and we'll talk about this a little bit later, because obviously everyone knows the result. It was one of those things that, is this going to be the time where essentially we take advantage of this finally and show what we can do and win basically the games that we need to win?
I really wanted us to win. I had a massive sort of want for us to win, and it was for no other reason than basically pettiness. It was because I heard somebody earlier this week say that Dunk was better than Mings and that Grealish, that they didn't rate Jack Grealish. And so I just thought, you know what? I want us to pick up the points here. It's a bit selfish and probably a bit petty, but that was my main sort of take before the game started.
And you certainly must have been pleased, as were we all, after the win, 2-1. Last gasp goal from Matt Target wins the game. But let's go chronological. We've got to speak about the events and the first big event. If you ignore the fact that Brighton were allowed a shot within like 9 seconds of the match after Maupai broke free, Adam Webster scores a goal. It's a free header. Tyrone Mings has to deal with two men who were at the back post. It looks like Villa were caught out by almost the fake out, because I think whoever was taking the free kick ran. They pretended to take it. They stutter-stepped and the line moved and then it was all disjointed. Two men attack the back post. One of them gets the ball. Tyrone Mings can't deal with the entire situation. It's a free header for Adam Webster. He's a big man. Puts it straight past Tom Heaton. It's as good as a free chance hit on goal as Villa were going to give, Cole.
Yeah, and I think the argument for a lot of people that they're going to stick with is the foul right before that caused the free kick. Like, I'm sure you guys agree that's not a foul, and that's definitely not a yellow card.
Yeah. I'm in total agreement.
It's not a
foul. It's ridiculous.
But also from a perspective of a Brighton fan, I mean, you can see it getting given. Like, there's not an awful lot of contact at all, but...
I don't even think he touches them. I think he just hits the ball.
Okay, but you only talk about that because they scored, right? Like, if that was a random free kick sort of in a different part of the pitch, you're thinking, fair enough, the referee might have got it ever so slightly wrong. I didn't think it was like an awful decision by any means.
To be honest, it's one of those I'd be like, even if it was right in the middle of the pitch, I'd be like, how? Like, I don't know. The referee just wasn't in control, and I thought that was quite obvious, but... obviously that's leading to the goal, and then you have basically Mings, Angles, and I think the other one that whenever you watch the highlights was Matty Target just ball watching basically. It just kind of seemed like we were scrambled, and that kind of caused us a lot of issues. And of course then you have our old Target Webster scoring, so that hurts too.
It was going to be either him or Mopi though, wasn't it?
Mopi almost tapped it in, really. He was maybe like half a foot away from just heading that in and making sure it went in. So it's one of those things essentially where we just turned off and we kind of essentially we just kind of let a poor situation that didn't go our way kind of get to us. And that was proven by the first goal.
That part of the game, it was scary in the stands because you're just watching this team like win everything. They're winning every ball. That high line is absorbing any pressure. When we kick it over the top, Wes just doesn't know what to do with it. Like, as soon as he receives the ball, it's almost like he lags out. Like, he's playing FIFA and he lags out and everything changes around him by the time he realizes what he can do. When we didn't even clear the ball. There was a good period of about, 5 to 10 minutes where we couldn't even clear our lines without, relieving any pressure. It was really scary. Brighton score. And I think what really relieves the pressure on Aston Villa here is a red card for Aaron Moy.
Yeah, and I think up to that, though, like, before we move on to that sending off, right, give Brighton some credit. They were playing some really good football. I think we have to give them that. I thought Connolly and Maupay were doing so well to just get ahead of our defence. And they were really scaring us at times. They really were. Pascal Gross on that right-hand side as well was, I think the duel that he had with Matty Target was brilliant, but I think especially in the first half. So, yeah, leading up to that sending off, James, I just want to give them some credit.
Yeah, Cole, I think I'm all about giving them the credit because... it looked like we was playing peak Barcelona at times. We couldn't take the ball off them, and they were creating chances at will.
Well, it's kind of funny how the game went, because the first two passages of play were super back and forth, and then they just virtually dominated until that second yellow came for the red for Moy. But when you look at it, though, like, I'm actually shocked how much Brighton charged forward and how much pace they had moving forward. I always kind of considered them, especially under Houghton, a very slow and not really tactically gifted team, and they were going forward at will. And even after the sending off, they still stuck to their game, and you have to give them massive credit for that.
Big plaudits to Graham Potter here. I think he really showed what his Brighton team are about and what his philosophy is about, because that Brighton team, they were playing some special stuff in that first half up until the sending off. But after the sending off, he was able to kind of adjust his team, and they succeeded for the most part in containing us and creating those little patient direct chances whenever they got a chance. But this red card, guys, Aaron Moy, two stupid yellows. The first one, the dumbest yellow, the easiest yellow you can pick up is when you piss around with an opponent's free kick. And that's a straight yellow. It's a dumb yellow. It's a soft yellow, but it's a yellow. The second dumbest yellow you can pick up is when you go in from behind. you go to ground in front behind him, no chance of winning the ball. He'd done that in a space of maybe 6 minutes. So you're gone. Goodbye. You've ruined your team's chance. And I think it was deserved.
Why was he so frustrated? That's what I don't get. Like, they were in control, Brighton. They were in brilliant control. And Aaron Moy's seen as a big leader on the pitch as well. So I think from a Brighton fan's perspective, you've got to be incredibly disappointed with him. And also, I said this on Twitter as well, Cole, but like, for some reason or another, it seems like for some players, they'd rather get sent off than let Jack Grealish get past them.
Isn't that weird? Like, wouldn't you rather stay on the pitch and help your teammates? It's kind of selfish. And like, the thing that really annoyed me about that as well is, you had the commentators who, for this game, drove me absolutely insane, saying, oh, well, he kind of pulled out. It doesn't matter if you pulled out. You still clattered him. Like, you still did it. That's like someone killing someone and hiding the body and go, oh, I didn't hide it well enough. Like, it's just, oh, my God. I love the excuses people come up with. But anyway, silly challenge by him. Well-deserved. And you know what? If that would have happened to us, we'd probably feel a little hard done by, but then you'd have the Brighton fans feeling the exact same way. So it is what it is.
Two soft yellows is still a red card. So regardless of how anyone feels, it's a set.
Yeah, and it's refreshing as well, because you get a lot of referees these days who kind of go, listen, mate, I would have booked you, but, you know, you're already on a yellow. Just calm down, mate. That's what you get a lot of these days, especially when you get. I mean, we've seen it a lot as Villa fans, right? This is not us crying right now, by the way. This isn't me crying about it. But we get a lot of fouls drawn against us, basically. Like Jack Grealish is very, very good at drawing fouls, and it happens in a lot of games where he just keeps getting chopped, keeps, you know, having contact made with him, deliberate contact as well, and players just seem to be immune to yellow cards sometimes. And that's not me calling the referees biased. It's just, I think it's the way things are, aren't they? You don't always give the second yellow straight away.
You were hit the nail on the head there by the referee saying, you know, I'm giving you time to call off. That the first yellow, it's a caution. The yellow card is also called a caution. It's a warning. It's don't do that again. If you do it again, you'll get sent off. And that precise situation happened to Aaron Moy. But what I'm also thinking about this Jack Grealish thing is that players probably see him as a challenge, because he does go through so many players and he does get fouled a lot. There's players out there like Aaron Moy who do want to show what they're made of. They want to take that step to become elite. And, you know, you do that by taking down the players that everyone's talking about, players like Jack Grealish, who always seem to get, like, quote-unquote, get away with things. Clearly, he wasn't able to do that because he chopped Grealish down. But again, you see it a lot. Grealish is a challenge for people. They want to win the ball from him, Cole.
Yeah, it's just basically, he gets fouled so much for a simple reason. That's because he's so neat and tidy with the ball and he can keep it so close to him at all times. And when it comes to that, it's so easy for someone to put their body forward and you're going to take them down. I'm surprised to see that by Moy, because if you look at it, especially last year, he was virtually the face of Huddersfield. You'd think, especially after going down, you want to keep Brighton up and stay at that level, because I think most teams in the bottom half, even mid-table, would take him if they could. Surprised by that, but with Grealish, I think we all have to agree, guys, he ran the show yesterday.
Absolutely. I think he was incredible. Like, the way he runs with the ball, it's like gliding. He can just cut through. He can do whatever he wants, almost. And, then, you know, it was a credit to him that Brighton had to sit back with a back six almost at times, because he was like a vacuum sucking this ball in and going wherever he wanted with it. And that's how we got the goals that we got. We got two goals, two legit goals. We scored three, of course, on the day. But Grealish was involved in all of them. The first one he got, he started the move and ended up tapping it in. The second one we got, it was through his determination. So all credit to him. And I think he'll get a lot of talk in the match ball section later on. But guys, that red card changed the game. It gave the game to Aston Villa after Brighton were looking really good. Then Aston Villa scored a goal and it was struck off. Conor Hourihan does what Conor Hourihan does. And he shoots from outside the box and buries it. He rams the ball into the net. It's a goal. Fist pumping. The whole end rises for him. A minute later, it struck off and nobody in the stadium, again, we've talked about this two home games in a row now, guys. Nobody knows why this was struck off. And I mean, if you've got the benefit of being able to watch it from home with announcers, whether they're biased or not, you know that it was struck off because Wesley brushed the goalkeeper.
How is that a foul? Like, I understand you want to protect your keepers, but like, I don't know how many times that I could slow that down and watch it in slow motion. I said this before we even started recording today, James. Matt Ryan is a good shot stopper, solid. His handling, his distribution is probably one of the worst statistically in the league. I don't know how many times yesterday there were catchable balls and he just parried them away. He's not a keeper that seems really comfortable with handling the ball, so he was probably going to punch it away anyways. It kind of seemed like he was leaning on Wesley when they're both jumping regardless, so to say it was his arm or something like that that truly affected him, like, come on, you had enough time for the ball to then go back out wide. I think it was to McGinn to pass it to Hurahan and for him to roof it right past you. Like, you had so much more time to get set back into position. Danny, what's your thoughts?
I'm going to ask the question, but is the striker allowed to kind of touch the keeper like that? I mean, Wesley's
going to... Did he really touch him, though?
He does touch him. I mean, he brushes his face and Wesley kind of... But the thing is, he's almost jumping out of it as well, Wesley, as if to say, oh, hang on a second, I shouldn't be here. I think it's harsh. I think, you know, without VAR, that's given and it's just not sort of considered kind of thing. But again, it's this... You have to draw this out again. Where, like, the goal is disallowed because of a foul that happened sort of 5 or 10 seconds ago. I don't know.
I think I understand the point that he's touching the goalkeeper, but is that touch a foul? That's my point. And I really don't think it is because Matt Ryan is hardly bothered by it.
No, he's not.
Like, he's not really put off by it. I think if Wes was more forceful, it'd be a foul. The same exact same scenario. If he was leaned a bit more into it, it'd be a foul. But I don't think he disrupts it, and it's such a, you know, in terms of footballing events, there's 3 or 4 things that happen between that and the goal. It's completely removed from the goal. This is like if he was giving, you know, ruling out a counter-attack because the ball went out, you know, 30 seconds ago and no one noticed it. In terms of footballing events, this is pretty far removed from the actual goal, even though it was only a few seconds, because so much happened between that and the goal. So I really question why. Because they forced themselves into that situation, didn't it?
Mm.
It was a subjective decision because we are here saying it's not clear. He touched him. Was it a foul? That's subjective. It's not a clear and obvious error. So, Cole, it comes down to this error then when a VAR has been enforced and used for whatever reason.
I just feel like referees on the pitch, like, they're just not confident anymore. Like, it's clear. They're second-guessing everything. They literally... As soon as they even have to think about something, they do the little special square thing, which I'm so glad I eventually knew what that was, because the first time I saw that live at a Toronto FC game, I was thinking, is this referee, like, smoking something? Or I don't know. But anyways, they just don't seem assured. And as a peripheral figure and the one that you're supposed to be managing how things are going on the field, you have to be more assured. And this is just taking it away from them.
I know. We have to be... You know, I kind of want to toe the line here. I don't particularly like referees and what they do, but no one knows who is in charge anymore because it looks like VAR overruled that goal. It came in, it communicated with the ref call, and it said, that's not a goal. Everyone in the stadium was in utter disbelief. And it feels like, Danny, that when Aston Villa win games, they have to not only beat the other team, but beat VAR.
It does feel like it. It does feel like it. But, you know, a lot of teams have had a go at VAR. A lot of teams think it goes against them. For example, sort of, if you hang around the bigger teams' areas on Twitter, Man City fans, for example, seem to absolutely loathe VAR. Liverpool seem to get a lot of VAR decisions, but then they had one go against them today, against Manchester United. I want to be careful about how we approach this from a fan's perspective, but what I will say is it feels very weird that every time we score a goal, I cannot celebrate straight away. Because, you know what? I'm going to be totally honest with you. I genuinely, at the end of halftime, I thought we were a goal up, and we weren't. I had no clue whatsoever that goal was disallowed. I want to put that one out there. But yeah, you just don't know whether or not to celebrate, and it just kind of just takes the essence of football away slightly.
Yeah, I think, I don't know how it is for the fan watching at home, but in the stadium, it's a bad experience. No one knows what's going on. No one knows when VAR is actioned or not. There was a moment in the game when McGinn appealed for handball and it said VAR check and it was a handball and nothing was done about it. Whereas McGinn was tackled in the box and nothing was done about it. You don't know when VAR is actually, there's no proper communication. And that's the big worry. Is it benefits? Who does it really benefit? Does it even support the referees that much? Or is it an obstructing tool in their duties?
It's an interesting question. I think it depends on the decision, doesn't it? I think it's always going to support the referee in general. I don't think referees are going to be that sort of bothered if their decision is overturned, because at the end of the day, their eyes aren't better than a computer's, you know? Referees get things wrong. They're human. It is what it is. But you know what? I do want to thank VAR for one thing, and that is probably my favorite Premier League moment of the weekend, where I don't know if you guys saw the Spurs versus Southampton game.
Oh, yeah.
But Spurs sort of score in the last minute. The VAR, basically, the goal goes in. The referee goes to VAR to get it checked. The referee allows the goal, but the big like screen in the stadium says no goal. So the goal's allowed, but everybody else in the stadium is thinking, wait, hang on a second. But then you only realize that it's a goal once you see the ball kind of get kicked off from the kickoff line. And Hawkeye, who I think produced that stuff, basically ended up having to send out an apology. It was pretty funny.
So this was Tottenham versus Watford yesterday. Wasn't
it Tottenham versus Southampton?
Watford, yeah.
Watford, sorry.
But that's an insane scenario, and this is what you get with VAR. Maybe we should be equipping our referee with more tools to, you know, enforce the game, like they do in the Bundesliga, where the referee can go over to the screen and actually have a look. You know, in the Premier League, it's a guy just telling them something and then going, yeah, it's not a goal. And he's like, why? It's like, because this happened. He's like, oh, there's no proper second opinion for the referee. It comes from another referee. So it's just adding another layer of subjectivity to the proceedings. But guys, I want to move on from VAR, because Villa did some good stuff yesterday. And one of the best moves they did resulted in a goal. It was Jack Grealish's first Premier League goal at Villa Park for Aston Villa. He starts a move. He flicks it out to Wes. Big Wesley, he does his little stutter step movement where he's kind of looking for someone to help him out. He passes it to Wilbert whips it in, and it hits Grealish and goes in, let's be honest. There's not much of a finish there. It bobbles across the line. Who cares? It's a goal, and it's justice for Aston Villa, who 5 minutes ago had a goal ruled out. But Cole, how good was it to see Jack Grealish score against Brighton after that preview?
Well, our dear friend Albion Roar said he didn't rate Jack Grealish. I'm not calling him out, but he clearly said that he's very confident in that. Well, I think things were proven differently on the day yesterday, because it's surprisingly, because when he did score, I think if he didn't score and we went into halftime one down, I think the atmosphere, and James, you could speak to this, probably would have been a million times different. And with that being said, that's two games in a row where Jack Grealish has scored. He's becoming the player we all hoped he would, and we already knew how great he was before, but he's just getting better and better. And oh, I just love the man. Call him my man crush. I'll have a million man crushes by the end of the season. But yeah, James, I want to know though from you, if that goal didn't go in, how do you think the atmosphere would have been?
It was pretty fractious and anxious for, you know, the entire game, because as soon as the guy goes off, as soon as Moy gets sent off because of the red card, you automatically assume, oh, that's Villa winning then. And when they don't, when it looks like they're not going to, or things happen that prevent them from winning, it's, you get nervous, you get scared, and you second guess the ability of these players. You know, I heard a lot of comments about Grealish and McGinn that I can't repeat on here, and these are clearly two of our better players who we trust in at all times to win us a match, and they did. They won us the match, especially Grealish won us the match. But you have the fans who get so emotionally charged, and God bless them. But there was a lot of doubt in that stadium for a long time. And man, that last minute goal, it was such a relief. There was a lot of people screaming who I've never heard make a sound during a game. It got to us all. But Jack Grealish was so good, Cole. And I hope the world knows that now. I hope Brighton fans realise that. I hope many fans, many neutral fans, not like we should care about their opinions because they don't watch a player, but they're starting to realise what we have done.
Yeah, I mean, I think what's been nice to hear is from a lot of people is that they actually do rate Aston Villa. I think we seem to be quite a popular team amongst neutrals, which wasn't the case in the Championship, funnily enough. But like, yeah, I think it's good to see that teams are genuinely worried about playing us, because I miss the days of that, man. Like, there was time where we were easy pickings. We were an easy point or two. And right now we're starting to look like we could spring a surprise on teams. Like, we're young and hungry. And I think with a team full of players like Jack Grealish, like John McGinn, you know that, you know, there's going to be effort put onto that pitch. And yeah, so far, I'm yet to remember the last time we genuinely played badly. We've had bad results happen in the last couple of months, but I'm yet to remember a time where we played badly. So opposition fans, yeah, I can understand why they're starting to get worried about playing against us.
It's a good place to be. I think Aston Villa have progressed quite well. There's plenty of nerves, but look, this game was not a normal game, Cole. This was a game where a player got sent off for a good performing team. That team had to change how they were set up, thus being a lot harder to break down. It put Aston Villa right off. Their temper was all over the place, but they persevered and won the game through a really good creative chance from Matt Target and Jack Grealish. I just want to know your thoughts on the period in between the first and second goal, because it didn't look like Villa were going anywhere. And actually, Brighton probably had a really good chance to score through Maupay and Montoya. Montoya's shot was saved and Maupay missed from pretty much point-blank range. But the fear was there, mate.
Honestly, we should have lost. Like, it was bad. Like, I don't think we even tested Ryan for, was it like almost half an hour? Like, we have the man advantage and we're doing absolutely nothing. And Brighton are just cutting. Like, I understand with this formation and the way Dean Smith plays, it's very forward and attacking minded. So you're going to have to accept that you're going to have gaps and you're going to have to defend well. And to be honest, we weren't defending well and we were pretty fortunate. I can't remember the one instance, but the kind of, I think it was Maupay that got through a few defenders and Mings had to clean it up at the last second out for a throw in on the left-hand side. And I think that would just kind of summarize how the second half was. It wasn't until, you'd have to say maybe like the 87th minute, that they finally kind of conceded and let us have the ball, and they just seemed too tired. And maybe it was just tired legs that won it for us. I'm not trying to be negative here, but from my perspective, that's how it kind of seemed.
Again, I go back to the anxiety we all felt, and I think that was a big part of it, was seeing Brighton still come forward with such, you know, free-flowing intent and manufacture these chances, even though their pace had dropped off. And when Villa won the ball, it was, who do we pass it to? Where do we go? Do we give it to Grealish? Players are standing still now because the movie's dead in the water. Now we have to kick it to Keenan Davis and hope he can manufacture something. The tactical game plan, I think that paid off because we made good chances. You know, Al-Ghazi missed a point-blank volley. Harahan had a good chance saved. You know, we aren't talking about this if those go in, and those are good chances that the tactics made. It's just the finishing. Again, the execution, Danny.
Yeah, man, Al-Ghazi's was bad. Al-Ghazi's was really bad. Like, all he really needs to do is tap that. But, like, for whatever reason, his instinct was to sky it over the keeper, which was the total opposite of what... I mean, if he'd have done literally anything else, it would have been fine. I mean, if he touches it and it comes off the keeper, all right, fine. It tested him. But he's literally just gone, you know what? Keeper's in front of me. So I've got to get it away from him somehow. And that was bad. I mean, Douglas Luiz's chance as well, that was pretty good. I know that was from distance, but you kind of trust him from that kind of range. And he was very, very close to scoring. And I thought, you know, you're right. We did create some good chances, but it almost seems with Wesley as well, sometimes it's one game in, one game out.
Yeah, I think I forgive him because of the goals he scored. It's just, I think we have to now take it into account when we talk about Wesley, that there's going to be a good game, a decent game, a bad game, a great game, a good game, a decent. It's going to be, you know, in complete flux. And I think that is par for the course for most strikers in the you know, the bottom 10 of the Premier League. It's not going to be every game is a showcase of force and skill. But Cole, I don't know where the goal was going to come from. And it did come from Matt Target, that left flank attack. It almost buried the ball into a Brighton defender on every cutback. Jack Grealish rode another challenge. He drives forward into the box, you know, with pleasure almost. He knows what's going to happen. He slides it through to Target. And my God, I thought Target was going to cut it back again to no one in the middle. He wasn't looking up, but no, he buries it. And, you know, my screams were big. I was screaming. How are you feeling then? Because, I mean, there must have been something in the back of your mind saying the VAR check is coming.
Well, let me set the scene for you. It's a nice Saturday morning here in Canada. I'm laying on my bed with a blanket over me watching. And the closer it gets to goal, I'm starting to sit up. And as soon as it goes in, I jump off my bed, basically almost face plant on the floor because I forgot how high my bed is, and just ran around my room and then sat back down. that's how sad I am, apparently. But no, it's it was Jesus. I don't know why I even said that. I just set myself up for something.
Dude, why were you in bed, dude?
It was like, you could keep in mind, the game was on from like 10 to noon. So I was having a nice relaxing morning.
No, dude, that's no time to be in bed.
I had people make me breakfast in the morning. I felt a little sleepy. It was a great, I had my...
Who's making you breakfast at 10 well, to okay, 12
it was
in
like
the morning?
9:30. I was at my girlfriend's house and her mom made me breakfast. So I had lots of bacon. I had lots of eggs. I was fired up for this game. We're getting away from the point here.
I just have a lot of questions. Sorry, I shouldn't question your lifestyle choices, man. You do.
No. it was ecstatic, and in my opinion, that goal saved Target's performance, because if I was going to go through each individual player, in my opinion, he probably would have been in the bottom probably three of poorest performances yesterday.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, the amount of times he gave away the ball, or it just kind of, it wasn't his game. I just, there's so many instances where I thought he could have done better, and it's not a Taylor versus Target thing. It's just, I didn't think he had a good game and that goal saved him.
I quite liked the way that he was overlapping with Grealish. I mean, that's one thing that I have to say that is really big. I think with Grealish having to come into the wing, I think it was really important that Target sort of replace Taylor, just for the fact that we needed some sort of strength on that left hand side, some sort of width on that left hand side. And I thought that Target found himself in midfield positions quite often during the game, and I thought that was really, really helpful, because you know, at least with him, that he can whip something in if he gets in a decent position. And I almost felt bad for Taylor as well when Target scored that goal, because he's been trying for a long time, hasn't he, to get his Villa goal, Neil Taylor. But Target just somehow finding himself in the box in the 95th minute and just doing something that almost seems so casual as a fullback. I just thought it was just great work. And I thought that shows you again why he commands that transfer fee.
Yeah, his attacking intent, Cole, is probably something I enjoy the most about him. And that probably leans into the defensive vulnerability. We've got a player who's essentially a winger, like Will Bear, running back and forth, I guess. I don't think he had the best game yesterday. We were quite open. You know, when we were looking for intent down the wing, it wasn't really there. There wasn't much combination with Trezeguet either. I think he was completely separate from the other 10 players on the pitch. So, yeah, I think I know where you're coming from with Matt Target. I don't think it's necessarily a major criticism or a left-back controversy in terms of the fight between him and Taylor. So, yeah, I guess I'm happy with him. He gets a goal. Maybe there's some little things he can iron out.
Yeah, I mean, you know what you're getting with him, because if you're going to play Taylor, you know he's probably going to be better defensively than Target is, but then Target brings a whole offensive element that Taylor can't. And I love Neil Taylor, but we all know if that was him, he's probably somehow going to hit it off the post. It's going to go off the keeper and then just bounce out or something, knowing his luck on goal. So yeah, you know what you're getting from him. So I'm glad he got the goal. That's great for his confidence. And I feel bad for Taylor, because good luck getting back in the team right now.
Yeah, he's probably going to take an injury, because we have a balanced side. Will Bear and Target are pretty similar in their playing styles. They like to drive forward. They like to overlap. They like the direct cross. And I think Neil Taylor is a more possession-based player, and he's certainly a lot more defensive than Target, which probably makes it for Target going forward so often. But guys, I'm going to need some match balls. We talk at length about this match now. Cole, I'm pretty sure your match ball won't be Matt Target, but you can't call bacon and eggs made by your girlfriend's mom as your match ball. You're going to need to pick a player on this occasion. So who's your choice?
Well, the great thing about mentioning that is my girlfriend listens to this. I'm sure she'll show her mom. So thank you for the breakfast the other day. It was fantastic. Jack Grealish. I mean, I feel like that actually might be unanimous. It might be surprised here, but he ran the show. He carried us through passages of play where honestly we didn't even deserve to be in. And yeah, as simple as that, he was my man of the match.
Dan, before you jump in, I'm going to have to give my match ball to Tom Heaton, because I think he did the steady thing of keeping Villa alive. There was close cut chances. Montoya shot right at him. He made it look easy, but these are the type of chances that Villa concede. They conceded them last year when Nyland was in goal, when Jed Steele was in goal. The easy shots they allow, they usually concede, and Tom Heaton wasn't letting anything past him yesterday apart from the one shot he had no chance of saving.
You like giving match balls to keepers, don't you, James?
I don't think I do. I think I'm going to interfere here. I'm going to, you know, pass this to Trevor Hood. Trevor, can you update us with the match ball situation? If you've been recording it, of course. I wouldn't like you to go back through every single episode so far and record the match balls, but we need the stats here. I don't think I have.
Okay, all right. I'd be interested to know.
I'm calling you out. I'm calling you out here.
That's incredible, by the way, that you'd give Trevor Hood that kind of statistical work to do. But all right, man. If you can't be bothered to do it yourself, like, I guess that's one for Trevor.
Well, guys, guess who got the game prediction right yesterday? This guy right here. Give me some credit. I looked at that right now. I completely forgot. give me the credit. I want it. I'm taking it. That's two this season.
I knew this happened. So I know this happened because I know one of us picked 2-1 and I know it wasn't me. So when I saw the scoreline, I was like, someone's got it right. I picked 3-2.
I mean, it wasn't far off. It was closer than what I got.
What did you pick?
I got 2-0.
Yeah, his was out the window right away.
Yeah.
Yeah, when we started that match with Brighton's intent, that was not happening, mate. So, in terms of that, who is your match ball?
Mine's Jack Grealish. He hasn't been given one yet. He ran the game. He absolutely ran the game for us. I think from start to finish, he was the constant. And I think even again when we were sort of playing quite poorly in the first half, what I'm impressed with by Jack Grealish every single game is just the amount of running he's doing, like. He was playing on the left wing, but the amount of times I saw him come back deep and pick the ball up defensively and dribble that ball out of defence when Brighton were putting pressure on us. I mean, that, first of all, is fantastic in its own right. But to then score and get the assist as well later on, fair play to Jack Grealish. He was absolutely the standout guy.
Did you say he didn't have one, a match ball?
Oh, wait, did...
Cole's just given him one.
I thought Cole gave it to
Maddie Target. Why am I going to give it to Maddie Target? Are you kidding?
All right, did you just disappear? Like, did you just?
No, I didn't disappear. I genuinely felt like I heard Maddie Target, and I apologize, Cole. I probably zoned out.
You definitely did, because one thing we did say was that he definitely wasn't giving it to Maddie Target.
That's probably what confused me. I think I heard I'm definitely giving it to Matty Target. That was, first of all, confusing to me, but there we go.
Let's move on. We've got a terrifying matchup just in time for Halloween, actually. We'll be taking on Manchester City in our third green kit on the 26th of October. This is a tough one. Manchester City, probably the most vulnerable they've been in a number of years, but still... pretty much far beyond what we could expect for a win. It's going to be a tough game, and I hope, Cole, that we are more Norwich than Watford, and I hope we can get a win rather than an 8-0 hammering.
Well, the thing I don't think that does us any well is that Manchester City didn't play with actual centre-backs yesterday, and they still won 2-0. So they're just so stacked.
That was like a FIFA team, by the way.
It's crazy.
It was really, really weird.
Like, honestly, they could have two teams, and they'd probably be both in the top, like, eight. They're just that good. Arguably, probably the greatest assembled squad ever could be. But, yeah, they really haven't done too much beside winning the league. But, in the odd Capital One Cup here and there. But, yeah, I'm saying that. I'd love a Capital One Cup, to be honest. But it's going to be tough. And we know, and I hope Dean Smith knows, we cannot play that way against Manchester City, because it's going to be like a historical scoreline here if we play the way we did against Brighton.
Dan, how do you beat Manchester City? Because do you sit back and let them just do whatever they want, or do you attack and leave the space? Where do you win?
Nah, you attack, man. It's the only thing you can do. Genuinely try and get them on the back foot. I know that that's better. That's easier said than done, but you just don't know what he's going to try and pull, basically. Pep Guardiola, that's the first thing. I think we're going to be so reliant on Mings and Engels, because the thing that Man City have is Aguero and Sterling, who are just, do you know what? They can escape defenders like so well. I mean, we're talking like prison break levels of like of escaping defenders, man. Like I think Aguero and Sterling have probably been two of the best players in the entire league this season, and I genuinely think that their attack scares me more at the moment than Liverpool's do, than Liverpool's does. Where Man City have been going wrong is the defense, and I think if they start lining up again with Fernandinho, Mendy, and Cancelo, I think it was as a back three, then we've got a real chance. What I wonder about is whether Wesley's going to be able to turn up against a big side like that. I don't know if he's been able to do that yet.
It's almost like a free hit, I feel. I think we have absolutely nothing to lose. There's two matches, Manchester City and Liverpool, the two, you know, real defining teams of this Premier League era, the two almost untouchable teams, even though I think Liverpool are losing right now. But they're still, you know, style speaks for themselves. These teams hammer other teams on a regular basis and were pretty much the only teams in contention for the title last season. Might be the same situation this season. Free hit, I think we have to attack, and I would expect a heavy loss. But, you know, if you're attacking, the chance there is that you can surprise them and spring a win. But then the risk is that you get battered. Goal.
Yeah, but I think the good thing to point out here is that, and it was evident yesterday, especially when our old man Benteke came on, is they really don't like physicality. Like, they really struggle with that, especially early. Because as soon as Benteke came on, he almost scored. And without, oh my God, I'm forgetting their keeper's name there, Ederson, without his fantastic effort to save that, that's a goal and it's 2-1 and you don't know essentially what's going to happen, because they just, it's kind of hard to read into, because you're playing with two central midfielders, so a center back, so it kind of doesn't do well for our confidence. And you know what, it probably, funnily enough, it doesn't do well for John Stones' confidence, because he was on the bench yesterday and still doesn't get picked, so...
You need Mings to turn up, don't you? And you need Nakamba to turn up as well. And I think Hourihane too, I think with if he can sort of tap into the aggressive games that he's had in the past, I think that could really help. But I think one thing's for certain, our midfielders are going to have to run like crazy. They're going to have to run like crazy, and it's going to be all down to energy levels. And the other thing you've got to hope for with Man City, and like this is... Again, this is where it comes down to Premier League levels and the difference between this and Championship. Quite literally, you're just going to have to hope that they have an off day. Really. I really do feel that way.
I mean, that's not a bad thing to hope for. I mean, people will be listening to this saying, oh, you've got to have faith in this Villa team. You've got to do this and that. But this is coming up against, like, the God-tier team of the Premier League. This is the team that will spend more hours than anyone else preparing for this match. They will spend more minutes on the pitch. They'll be well-drilled. They have elite-level players who are, you know, realms above what we could wish for, even though we have fantastic quality. And, you know, I trust in Mings, McGinn, Engels, Heat and Grealish. And even Wesley, I trust in them to do their job. But these are you're playing against the cream of the crop. And that's no slight on our players or our manager or our team. This is the best, you know, the best team in the league, bar Liverpool. They're both up there for that same question. It's going to be a tough match. I think really have to hope for a lot of luck here. Like Norwich. Norwich got, you know, luck of the draw. They managed to catch out Otamendi, score a stunning goal and really put that team on the back foot and shake their confidence. They came out in the next game, hammered Watford 8-0. So we're on the precipice here. I think we're more similar to Norwich than Watford. Let's see what we can do, Cole.
Yeah. I'm just scared. I still have the Chelsea scoreline from way back in my head, and we have to play with confidence. We have to make sure we're assured at the back. People just have to do their jobs. And I wouldn't be shocked if you do actually see, and I think about it, Neil Taylor in this, because I wonder if he's going to go a little bit more defensive in certain areas. And the thing I want to know from you guys, I think maybe might be the hottest talking point in terms of the starting lineup for that weekend would be, who would you rather have out there to start, Trezeguet or El Ghazi?
I'm gonna go for Al Ghazi, because Trezeguet, Al Ghazi's inconsistent. He's there, you know, he floats around, he doesn't seem, you know, 100% sometimes, and then he'll pull off some amazing stuff. But Trezeguet,
yeah, I agree, man.
Last match, well out of it, wasn't with it at all. And that's a slight on him. I think he needs to get up to speed, but he's not gonna get the minutes in this team with Grealish out left, because Al Ghazi is probably the better choice sometimes. Trezeguet's got a role, but I don't think it's starting right now. I think he may emerge as a starter, right now, I don't think we give him the minutes against City, unless you pan around that, bring Grealish back into the middle and pull him out left. Unless he's starting opposite Al Ghazi, he's not starting at all.
He's not ready to start, I don't think. Trezeguet, certainly not against Manchester City. He just seemed sort of out of it, as you say. It almost seemed like he just wasn't able to get on the ball much in this game. And I think that, yeah, for me, it's El Ghazi. I know we talk a lot about El Ghazi, and we talk about how he, how he performs in some games, and in others, he's not quite as consistent. But if you're going to tell me that the guy with El Ghazi's passion isn't going to be up for Man City, then I'm going to tell you that I think you're wrong. El Ghazi absolutely will pull out his best effort for a game like this. He knows it's going to get him noticed, and he's a guy that he plays with confidence. He's a confidence player. I think it's got to be him. It's got to be him.
Well, I think it's time for a prediction then. I'm going to go with a bold one. I'm going to go for a loss, an Aston Villa loss, and I'm going to say it's 4-2 to Manchester City, and I think there's no shame in that. I think I'd happily take that.
See, I actually don't mind that scoreline, because that would actually put our goal difference back at zero. And I'm kind of crazy with the whole goal difference thing, because you never know, especially in our situation. Danny, you know what? You go ahead. I need to think about this for a second.
God, man, this is like genuinely, this is like past the hot potato, man, whatever this is. I'm going to go with a 3-1 defeat to Man City. I don't think we're going to get battered. I don't think we're going to get battered. I think the defense will
3-1
hold
is a battering.
No, it isn't.
3-1 is a pretty... It's 3 goals. In Pro Evolution Soccer, Pro Evolution, the one with the bald ref on the front.
What?
If you were 3 goals down in that, the commentator would say, game over.
Well, it depends. It depends how early on in the match that is. I think... Oh, and I'm saying 3-1. When I'm saying 3-1, I'm saying... We'll hold on, right? It might be 1-0 to Man City. Maybe we'll grab a goal back. It'll be 1-1 until sort of the 80th minute. And then, lo and behold, Raheem Sterling somehow manages to get at the end of a cross that comes out of nowhere, sticks his foot out, slides across the box. And then at some point or another, when we're trying to score the equaliser, I don't know, Aguero pops up. Maybe it's John Stones. maybe it's Edison. All I know is that we're not gonna. If we lose, I don't think we're gonna get bad, but we're probably gonna lose because it's Manchester City.
Cole, to finish the podcast, you've had enough time to think now. What's your prediction?
And make sure it's as detailed as my prediction.
Okay. Well, the thing I was just about to say is that there's two perspectives on this. The first was that I was gonna say Liverpool, we're gonna lose. But now they're actually drawing because Lallana scored in the 85th minute. So that's probably going to be a 1-1 draw. So this is hard because City are also playing on Tuesday against Atalantis. And then Atalanta, not Atlantis. Wow, I should really clarify that before people think I'm talking about something. But after that, then obviously our game's the first game on Saturday, the early game, if I'm correct. So if that's the case, they might have some tired legs in there. I'm going to be bold. I'm going to be so bold, and I'm going to go for a 2-2 draw.
But no, I think it's a sound preview there. I think we'll wrap it up there. You can follow Cole at Talk Aston Villa. You can follow Danny at Raza Journo. And you can follow me at Jamie Russian, and we'll catch up after Villa hopefully don't embarrass themselves against Manchester City. Let's hope for the 3 points. Goodbye, and up the Villa.